Hi, it's Garen with Shamrock Roofing and Construction. Need a new roof fast? Consider Shamrock Roofing and Construction. Our rapid repair team will get you a quote within 24 hours and will always repair before we replace. One call does it all. ShamrockRoofer.com.
Twin Peaks, a great spot to be watching the NBA draft. You'll hear it right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. You can head to the Twin Peaks nearest you, Independence, Olathe. Get set up at the bar or a table. Always great views of all the TVs. Fantastic time to watch some sports, whether it's the Olympics, the Royals. Twin Peaks has you covered. Don't forget lunch specials. You can get a great lunch special right now. Light yet hearty combos. They've got them right now put together at a great, great price, featuring savory soups, crisp salads, variety of sandwiches, whatever you're craving. They got you covered at Twin Peaks. Enjoy your next lunch break at Twin Peaks. Find them online at TwinPeaksRestaurant.com. Let's talk some NBA draft. As I mentioned, we'll have it on right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, the home of all the big sporting events. Kyle Boone covers the NBA for CBS Sports. He's with us here. Kyle, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Looking forward to the draft tomorrow.
Yeah, I am too. I'm always a big fan of the NBA draft. I do like that the NFL seems to go on forever, over 3 days. Mm-hmm. But I also like that the NBA gets it all done in one quick day as well. I think, you know, differences are positives at times, and this is one of them. And, you know, the Pistons say that Cade Cunningham is just one of three guys, along with Jalen Green, the guy from the G League, and Evan Mobley, the center from USC, that they, at least yesterday, they were saying that they still hadn't made their choice. Do you buy that? Is there any way Cade Cunningham doesn't go number one?
I think there's some way that Cade doesn't go number one. There's a report out there that Jalen Green came in, worked out for the Pistons, and did an interview and really knocked their socks off. And that makes sense. He's a really talented shooting guard, one of the best scorers in this draft. I think you get him in a private workout setting, he's going to wow you. I think it's still most likely that Cade ends up going number one. Now, to me, I think the question I think that they're probably wrestling with is, okay, if we really like Jalen Green, and according to a lot of people, they really like Jalen Green, do they decide, hey, let's move down to number two or to number three and see if we can extract a ton of value for a team that really wants Cade Cunningham? That, to me, is the question. And we'll see kind of what happens over the next 24 hours. But I still think the most likely scenario is the Pistons just stay put. You know, this is the first time they're picking at number one in 51 years. So I can't imagine they do anything other than stay put and take the player that most people think is the best player in this draft.
Did Jalen Green clearly helped his status, right, by going to the G League? He did enough that I think he was like number eight or nine in the class, and now here he is going number two in the NBA draft. I mean, it's safe to say he, and again, this may be different with now the ability to make money in college, name, image, and likeness going to change it, but he certainly, you know, showed that the G League can be a very profitable route.
Oh, no question about it. Yeah, he made a really strong impression in the G League, and that was the first year that they had the G League Ignite program, kind of getting it off the ground. He led that G League Ignite program in scoring last season, 18 points per game, shot 36.5% from the three-point line. Now, Jalen Green himself has said on Twitter, he deleted this tweet, but said, you know, if I had gone to college, the race for the number one pick might have been a little bit different. I think he was hinting more towards, I would have gotten a lot more exposure in college had he gone to a Kansas or a Kentucky than he did at the G League. I think I kind of agree with that. I think a lot more people would be aware of Jalen Green and kind of the special athlete that he is as a scorer and as a creator. But no question, he helped his stock. We're talking right now about someone who I think is a consensus top two prospect in this draft. That was not necessarily the case a year ago, so he has really boosted his stock in the eyes of talent evaluators, and I think he'll probably end up going, you know, probably number two on draft night tomorrow.
I think it's $500,000 that the guys got to play for that, at least the top guys got to play for that Ignite. Mm-hmm. Is that number going to change? Are we going to see those players? I mean, if Alabama's quarterback can get nearly $1 million, at least according to Nick Saban, then I think basketball, which is even more a showcase event, at least for the top 3 to 10 guys, is going to be even more lucrative than that on the college basketball front, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and Jalen Green, I think the kind of the baseline salary that he got was $500,000. So I would imagine with endorsements, he probably made more. There's going to be blue chip recruits who decide they want to go the G League Ignite route, and they're going to make, you know, upwards of $500,000 and probably, I think, closer to $1 million. College is going to be really interesting. It's a totally separate entity. There's really good professional paths that players can take now. The G League, the overtime elite program has just kind of gotten off the ground. You can play overseas in the NBL. That's what LaMelo Ball and Josh Giddey in this year's draft, who's going to be probably a lottery pick, did as well, to kind of improve their stock. So there's going to be a ton of options. But I think now college is going to start to emerge as like a real viable path that players take, and they're not going to take a financial haircut in doing so, because now the name, image, and likeness is kind of getting off the ground. I don't think you're going to be giving up a ton of money deciding to pass on some of these other professional paths.
I've got friends that actually went over and spent time in New Zealand. They say New Zealand is an American sucks. So guys that listen, now it's probably a lot better. My buddies didn't go over there making $1 million either. So I'm sure it's a lot better if you've got some real money in your pocket and aren't staying upstairs from some nutty lady like one of my friends did, right? Like he rented the top room upstairs. But I've heard New Zealand, not huge fans of Americans as just one spot. But I got to think that that's indicative of some other places overseas, not to bog down on this name, image, and likeness. But, you know, baseball gets kids to not sign to mm-hmm. make money when they weren't paying the kids, because the facilities in college athletics are so much better. The travel in college baseball and SEC baseball program is so much better than minor league travel. And I've heard some people say, hey, that's true of college basketball as well. You know, as opposed to busing from game to game in the G League, chartering at Kansas and North Carolina and Duke is actually a much better life. If now you're getting paid comparable or near comparable money, and you think, like Jalen Green is saying, the exposure is better, this could be a huge win for college basketball, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think so. The only thing that college athletics, college basketball, college football has been missing is the fact that you can not pay players, and now that has changed. The fact that you're going to get some sort of education, you're going to travel first class, you're going to be treated as well as any student at your university, and on top of that, you're going to get paid. That was the one thing that I think was really hindering some guys from fully committing to do the college route, and even was still getting players to decide, I'm going to pass on, you know, guaranteed money and decide to go that college route. So it's going to continue to be an enticing route, I think, moving forward. Now, there's every year I do think that the G League is going to continue to get top recruits, because it is good money, and you don't have to go to college, and you can focus on solely being a professional like Jalen Green and Jonathan Kuminga did last year, both guys who are going to go top 10 in this draft. But no question, I do think that the college just emerging now, being able to cash in on your name, image, and likeness is going to be really important to keeping college relevant.
If it does come down to Cade Cunningham or Jalen Green, can you give me comps for what you think each guy will be as pros?
Yeah, there's two comps that I get for both of these guys. Cade is most often comped to Luka Doncic, and that is high praise. And I often push back on that, because I say, how can you compare this guy to a guy who is probably going to be the MVP front runner next season, if not one of the top three MVP front runners? Great size, can create off the dribble, has great vision. The positional, I think, size and advantage that he brings to the table is just tremendous. And he's a physical two-way player who I think can be kind of your lead guard for an NBA team. The comp I get for Jalen Green, it's Zach LaVine, which I think is pretty interesting, because in a vacuum, if Zach LaVine is in this draft, you probably don't take him number two. But the athleticism, the way he's able to really jump off of 1 and 2 foot, just be completely athletic freak, is really impressive. And then just his scoring ability stands out. Guys feel like he's easily going to be a 25-point-per-game type of scorer in the NBA. Someone told me that they think he can lead the NBA in scoring. So if you can get that type of offensive player in the NBA and get him at number two, And I think that makes a lot of sense. Those are two, I think, pretty high praise comps. And that's probably closer to their best possible NBA outcome. But those are the two comps that I hear pretty consistently from both of those guys.
Through the first two games of the NBA Finals, I thought DeAndre Ayton may be making Evan Mobley a lot of money. The last four games, he was neutralized quite a bit by the Bucks. Was there a scenario that had maybe Mobley moving up, but now put him back? And because it didn't finish well for Ayton and the Suns, we're back to saying the big man's dead in the NBA, and therefore Mobley, in past years, who would have been number one with a bullet, 15, 20 years ago, is now number three. And I don't know, is he in danger of even sliding lower?
Yeah. I don't think the Ayton thing affected it too much. I think it's more just a testament to Jalen Green being on the rise and Cade just being in his own world as two guys at the top of this draft. Analytic people that I talk to feel like Evan Mobley, almost in every draft over the last decade, would go number one overall. And if not for Jalen Green and Cade Cunningham, he'd probably go number one overall in this draft. I don't think he slides out of the top five. Would be pretty surprised if the Cavaliers stay put and don't draft him at number three. He's 7 foot. He moves like a wing. He played point guard kind of growing up and obviously filled out and really rocketed and is a 7-footer now. But that's the type of skill set that you're talking about. Guy who is 7 foot, who is essentially like a jumbo wing, can make plays off the dribble. Can pass it at a really high level. And then just obviously the shot blocking. Averaged 3 blocks per game as a freshman in the Pac-12 last season for USC, which was top 10 nationally overall. So just the skill set, I think the physicality, he's a guy who I think in the NBA could be like a future defensive player of the year. So it'd be pretty hard to see him sliding too far in this draft, and I think he'll probably end up going probably two or three.
You've got Scottie Barnes going number three in this draft, in your mock draft from a couple of days ago. And when I bring up his name, most people go, who? At least in these parts they do, from Florida State. What's the upside for Scottie Barnes and for him, averaging 10 points a game at Florida State to be finding himself, granted just as a freshman, but to be finding himself this high on the board?
Yeah, he's 6'9", forward. The elevator pitch is that he does a little of everything. Can guard point guards, he can guard wings, he can guard forwards, and he can guard centers. He defended every single position at Florida State, and they did a lot of switching defensively. He was able to hold his own. Physically, he looks the part. The shot is not great. He shot below 30% from the three-point line, but had a better assist rate last season than Cade Cunningham, who's going to go number one, and Jalen Suggs, one of the lead guards in this draft, who's going to go probably top five or six. So the passing and the vision, the playmaking for his size and for his position, I think really stands out. That's the elevator pitch. He's a guy who I think has really risen during this draft process. Everyone I talk to who's done interviews with him feels like he's just an all character type of guy. So I think he's been linked to the Orlando Magic a lot at number five. I'm just not entirely sure that he's going to be there at number five. His stock has really risen.
Why is Jonathan Kuminga, who is the other big G League guy that's expected to go, at one point was expected to go top five for sure. You've got him at number seven. He seems to get dinged for his inability to shoot. And why isn't the same thing costing Scottie Barnes?
Yeah, not the same level of creator that Scottie Barnes is. He's an okay passer. Athletically, he's a freak show. He can create his own shot, kind of get things off the bounce and create for himself. But he doesn't have the same passing vision or the playmaking that Scottie Barnes has. And then defensively, I think he can be a really, really good defender. He's 6'8" and he's a wing. So physically, he has everything that you really want in kind of like that prototypical 3-and-D type of wing. Just we didn't see it. When he played in the G League Ignite program last year, there were a ton of defensive lapses where he's just not locked in. Didn't seem like he cared. I think there's a lot of upside here, but I do think that teams just didn't quite see it. And so he's a guy that I think has seen his stock drop just a tad. Was a guy that was probably like the fifth or sixth guy in this draft. He could go number five in this draft wouldn't surprise me, but there's also a chance I think that he slips out of the top 10. So that would be kind of surprising. But I think just what teams have seen from him in the G League Ignite program with some of the shot questions and then just some of the defensive questions, he could be on the slide just a tad here.
The Warriors are at 7-14. They weren't really that good last year, and you know they're all counting on getting Klay Thompson back, and that's suddenly in their mind somehow going to make them again the best team in the NBA. I don't think so. I think they're on the downslope. 7-14 aren't certainly guarantees that you're going to get two franchise kind of players there. Most people have them making a trade for an established player to try to make one or two more runs at a championship. You've got a trade in there as well with the Wizards. Is that just, okay, this fits, or do you think that's the team? Do you think that they definitely trade with somebody if it's not the Wizards?
Yeah, that's more of a speculation. The Curry, Clay, Draymond trio seems to have made it clear that they want to try and push their chips to the table next season and compete for a title. My tea leaf reading suggests that, you know, maybe they want to cash in and they don't want to see what 7-14 end up becoming, because, you know, maybe they're good players, but they don't materialize in the way that people think they will. I ultimately think that the Warriors will just stay put and use these picks at 7-14. They can get two really good players. Now, the question is, can they help this Warriors iteration compete for a championship? I think they can probably get two players who can help compete for a championship, but it's definitely not a sure thing. And I think if you're the Warriors in a vacuum and you can trade those picks, package a few other players and go get, you know, a Bradley Beal or a Pascal Siakam or someone who is potentially available on the market, that would make a lot of sense. But I'm curious to see what they do. I selfishly kind of hope that they keep these picks, but there's some really good players that are going to be available at 7-14.
All right. Next one, Davion Mitchell from Baylor. Mm-hmm. I think the kid's outstanding. He is, what, 22, 23 years old, even though he had another year of eligibility. He shot the ball extremely well, but never had shot the ball extremely well until last year. Is this a guy that might shock some people and go up there? I mean, if he can shoot the way he showed he can shoot, the way he can defend, then this is a guy that ought to be a top six or seven pick. If the shot was just a lucky year, he was hot for a season, and he's going to be really a on-the-ball defender, a smaller version of Marcus Smart, then he probably belongs down in the teens. What's your opinion of him? What's the consensus amongst general managers as to which he is?
Yeah, I'm higher on him than I think the NBA is in general. What I saw from him in the NCAA tournament probably colored my view on him more than anything, just because he's lightning quick. He can get to the basket at will. And then defensively last season, he was the Naismith Defensive Player of the Year, the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year. Baylor coach Scott Drew called him off night just because everyone he faces up against has an off night. So I think that defensive skill set and his ability to kind of create his own shot, create for others, is just going to translate. But there's a few things working against him. He's 22 years old, which in NBA draft years is ancient. He's one of the older prospects in this draft. Shot the lights out last season, shot 44.7% from three, but the year before he was 32.4% from three. The season before that, when he played at Auburn in 2017, was just 28.8%. So I think there's some questions that, okay, did he just have one really good year shooting the ball and it's kind of aberrational, or is this actually going to stick? And then I think additionally people are just concerned that, okay, he's a really good player. He competes hard on defense. He can create, but is he just like a backup point guard? And are you using a lottery pick to draft a backup point guard? I hear those concerns, and I think NBA teams have kind of decided he's more of the latter. For that reason, I think he's going to end up going outside the top 10, but wouldn't surprise me either if some team just decides to take a chance on him inside the top 10.
Yeah, I would love to see him not go in the top 10 because I want to see him pissed off and motivated, because I think if he is, he's going to be a beast. Do we see Damian Lillard or Ben Simmons traded during the course of this draft?
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so. Now, maybe it's possible, but it feels like the Ben Simmons thing is going to take a while. Lillard, I feel like, is just kind of applying pressure for Portland to try and go and upgrade this roster. I don't think he's going to officially make a trade request. So I would love to see some fireworks on draft night. No question. I just don't see it.
We're talking right now with Kyle Boone from CBS Sports, getting ready for the NBA draft. You'll hear it here on Sports Radio 810 WHP tomorrow night. Time for our Final Four with Kyle. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If an orthopedic or sports injury puts you on the bench, the same experts that care for the Chiefs and the Royals, they can see you quickly. Get an appointment at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. I will start you with this. How does the USA Olympic basketball team finish?
They win the gold medal.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
No, not deterred by that loss to France?
I mean, I'm definitely deterred. I just think you've got Kevin Durant, you've got Devin Booker, you've got Damian Lillard. You have so much talent. I certainly haven't liked what I've seen from this team, but I also think that talent-wise, they're bound to figure things out. So I still think they can win the gold, and I believe they will.
The next NBA champion will be who? We won't hold you to it, but what are you feeling right now? Who wins next year?
It's going to be the Lakers. They'll figure out their point guard situation, whether that's Dennis Schroeder or signing someone in free agency. AD is going to be back healthy. LeBron is going to be 48 years old, still rocking, or 68, or however old he is. Mm-hmm. Lakers win it again next year.
Does Chris Paul ever win a championship?
No, he doesn't. I'm sad about it. As a Thunder fan, I was rooting for it, but I don't see it. I think that was probably his best shot.
And by the way, you're a Thunder fan. That's awesome. The NBA draft is going to be your oyster for about, you know, the next
right.
5 years. That's great. Finally, when will the Wizards quit kidding themselves and get a new name? I mean, if the Indians can become the Guardians, football team is going to change its name. You can't be red, white, and blue and still going by the Wizards. When are they going to dump that turd? It ain't Harry Potter time anymore. And if you don't want to go back to bullets, fine, but that's got to go, doesn't it? When do they wake up?
No, I like the Wizards. I think it's better than the Bullets, I think, right?
No, it's not. Not to get into a gun thing, but Bullets have, you know, if they've been a part of our history. I don't want to get into the gun thing, but no, it's definitely not better. It's fine if you don't want to go there. I understand the reason to not go back to the Bullets and why they went away from it. But the Wizards thing, along with becoming teal and green and pink and whatever the hell color scheme it was, red, white, and blue – and something patriotic when you play in D.C., for God's sake.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, what are you going to change it to, though?
Federals, senators, let's see, thieving, self-interested crooks.
Filibusters.
Filibusters.
Sure, sure.
I mean, trying to get rid of that.
So many different ways we can go with this one, you know? I mean, so many different ways. But the red, white, and blue does not work with Wizards. I've yet to see any wizard roaming around with an American flag draped around his shoulder.
Yeah, I agree. That's a tough sell.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Hey, Kyle, great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. We'll be reading your work, looking forward to your reaction to draft night, and hopefully we get a chance to talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Thank you, Soren.
All right, you bet. Kyle Boone from CBS Sports with us here in the program, the NBA Draft. It'll be right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Tomorrow night, we love it. It's a big get-together time for us. We hope you enjoy it. If you're out and about, make sure you're listening to 810. We'll have all the coverage. And, of course, don't miss out on your opportunity to play in the 810 golf tournament. Spots are filling up fast. We've still got a few, at least I was told that this morning. So check it out right now, 810WHB.com. $108 per player, plus that 10 cents, 108.10, the charge. I don't want somebody bitching at whoever, but they said 108, 108.10 is the price. Golf cart, welcome bag, drink tickets, breakfast, and lunch. It's at the wonderful Fred Arbanis Golf Course. We hope to see you there on Thursday. It is our listener golf tournament. Make plans to join us. Can't be any hotter than it is today. Really, I mean, almost scientifically, can't be any hotter than it is today. In fact, it's expected to get cooler this weekend, so yeah, that means it'll clearly be cool on August 10th. Sign up now, 810WHP.com. We'll talk a little bit of basketball, get back into the football, some Royals baseball still to come. You're listening to the program on Sports Radio, 810WHP.
The program with Soren Petro.
And unbeknownst to me, I pull it off the spool. It hits
it
and rolls out from under the stall.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer.
I'll take burnt ends, please. Thank you.
Anytime, man. Major League Baseball, who's the youngest player ever to be named league MVP?
Youngest player ever to be named league MVP, Major League Baseball.
He turned 22 in the middle of his MVP season.
Fred Lynn?
Nope. He's the only player ever to be 21 years old at any point during his MVP season. He is 72 today.
Willie Mays is older than that, so it's not Willie Mays. Or is it? It's not Willie Mays. He's way older than that. 72. So he'd have been 22 50 years ago, so in 71. So this is 70-71 range?
Mm-hmm.
Not Ripken. That's pre-Ripken. Trying to think right around.
He's also the answer to another MVP question we'd like to throw out. I was going to use
Vida Blue.
Vida Blue.
Nailed it.
Not only is Vida Blue.
Crushed it.
The last.
Did you hear that, kid? I crushed it.
Not only is Vida Blue the last switch hitter to win the MVP.
That's right.
League MVP. He is the youngest. I was looking. He was the youngest of the 11 guys who have been MVP and Cy Young on the same year. And that was going to be my question. Then I realized, no, he's the youngest MVP, period. He turned 21 on July 28th, 1970, or 22 on July 28th, 1971.
Did you know that Joe's caters?
I do.
What would be better than having a big party and having it all catered by Joe's?
Nothing.
I would agree. Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, 47th and Mission, 119th and Strangline, 117th and Row. Find it online at joeskc.com. Get you a Rocket Pig sandwich today. You'll be a better person for it. Frankly, it'll show your intelligence to everyone around you. And you'll be just the happiest kid on your block. It's Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Number one fries. Don't sleep on any of the sides. Number one rings in Kansas City. Documented. These are documented facts. Check it out. Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Our thanks to Kyle Boone in the NBA draft. Anything jumping out at you? I got some other things. I don't know. We got much more to say about the NBA draft other than we love it. We'll be watching it. We'll be looking forward to it on Thursday. And, of course, you'll hear it here on 810. Anything jump out at you there? Like, I don't. I think the Warriors are kind of kidding themselves. Do you think the Warriors can make it? Like, does Bradley Beal set? Because I think it's going to be 7-14 and Weissman.
Yeah.
Is that? I'd rather have 7-14 and Weissman than Bradley Beal.
Agreed.
But Bradley Beal, if Klay Thompson can stay healthy, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and then whatever odds and ends you can piece together. Is that ready to beat a healthy Lakers, the current Suns, the current Jazz, a healthy Nuggets? Is that better?
I say no. I still think the Warriors have too many miles, too many trips up and down the court.
Agreed.
On their legs. So no, I don't think so.
I agree. I agree with that. I'd rather have the picks and start. And hopefully you nail at least one and the other one's good and Weissman develops and, you know, Klay Thompson comes back. But I said it. You remember when they lost the 3-1 lead to Cleveland, and was that the year they all started blowing out?
No, they blew out in 19.
The following year,
or
2 years later
when they lost to Toronto.
They lost to Toronto.
Durant and Klay Thompson.
I asked Roxy. I said, I think this is the last time we see the Warriors in the finals. Do you agree? He said, oh no. Klay Thompson will be back. Now, to Roxy's credit, and I think Roxy was, you know, I was not to pick on Roxy, more to pick on the Bay Area mindset, that this was just a setback. I'm like, I don't know. You're at the end of your window. Kevin Durant's leaving. Klay Thompson had one major injury, now has had two. Steph Curry's not getting any younger, and he's battled his own, you know, set of maladies over the years. I'd be trying
to. Thompson still, I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I'd use both lottery tickets.
Yep.
You know, with
Mitchell and Kuminga or whoever ends up being, but that'd be a hell of a defensive team.
Yeah, I think you take your shot with two draft picks, more cap room as well, and try to get it done. But we'll see. Bradley Beal, St. Louis guy, I'd like to see him land someplace successful and have a good run of it. But again, you'll hear the NBA draft right here. I think Cade Cunningham is going to go number one, but. If he doesn't, Houston moves up to one and gets him, and Pistons move down to two and take Jalen Green. If you make that move, you're almost better to just take Jalen Green and not trade down. If you trade down and you're wrong, you're the idiots that passed.
Yep.
If you take Jalen Green, you just got it wrong. Don't kid yourself, though. Yeah, you'll get crapped on that way, too.
Yeah.
I think just less inches of crap accumulation if you just take your guy.
Yeah. I still think interesting, though, that the fact that Evan Mobley isn't even in the conversation,
I
it
agree.
Doesn't seem for number one. I mean, you mentioned the point about did DeAndre Ayton hurt possibly what he did with his playoff performance.
No, but his last four games, because I think
that's
definitely
me.
Helping it early in
right,
the playoffs.
Right, but yeah, the last four games specifically when he was going up against Giannis and the Bucks, but man, Mobley, he's a freak show. So that's a guy who I think should have stronger consideration for number one.
Yeah, I do too. And I get it that like the game isn't all around the big guy, but you know, Luka Doncic, there's not near as much buzz around Cade Cunningham as Luka Doncic. And Jason Tatum's been the comp that I've heard a lot for Cade Cunningham. And if he's Jason Tatum, that's a fine player, but it's not Luka Doncic. And I would say he probably figures to be somewhere in between those two, or a poor man's version of either one of those guys. And poor man's versions, by the way, are not top 10 players.
Well, and even Luka Doncic becomes a more interesting discussion now, because even we've talked about when we were looking at even this year's playoffs, who would you rather have, Trae Young or Luka Doncic? Luka, while a great player and does so many things, doesn't seem like he's getting anywhere in the playoffs. And in addition to, it seems like maybe he got sideways with the coach or whatever. They blew out a whole staff based seemingly around keeping him happy. So an interesting thing to keep in mind.
It is. I think they're comping his physical abilities.
Sure.
And not necessarily the fact that he's a pain in the ass. But
Smokey McSmells a lot.
Yeah. Cade Cunningham did go ahead and keep his pledge to Oklahoma State when he wasn't even sure that they were going to be able to go to the tournament. Now, maybe he had better information and they did end up telling him, yeah, listen, trust me, you're going to end up in the tournament. But I think there's a lot to like about the character side on Cade Cunningham. We'll see how it goes, though. I do think that it's going to be a lot of fun, the other picks, because I think there is a star out there somewhere. The draft is so young now, they just can't be honed in that well. And whether it's the kid from Florida State or it's Mobley or it's Mitchell, or they're missing on somebody.
Well, and as opposed to the NFL draft, which we love because it does take 3 nights, in this draft you see so much different action with picks being traded, players being involved in picks, all of the future picks that go along with it. It's just always an unbelievable night.
Guys putting on hats and then having to take them off. Half an hour later,
you find out how long it takes a television production to get a guy to the podium because four picks have already taken place since the last guy was announced. You know, you find out just how slow it is to produce TV.
Just how good Twitter is at getting the picks out. Just how little Curtis will engage in the actual conversation because he's staring at Twitter.
Twitter on NBA draft night, I mean, it's just so ahead of what you're watching. It's unless you can use it to kind of like when our friend Tate was over there a few years ago, your place, and I was just like annoying him by letting him know that I knew. He's like, don't tell me who it is. Oh, you mean this guy here? Stop it. That's the only real reason to do it. But
was the night that he hated on the fact that they made the trade for Mikal Bridges.
Yeah. He was not thrilled.
They got Ayton. He wasn't sure about Ayton. He wanted Doncic. They drafted Mikal Bridges. He didn't like that. He was a very disappointed Suns fan that night. And Doncic may have still been the right choice, but it was funny to hear him. Then watching him
sat there in his Suns
root for the Suns on the way to the NBA Finals.
Groused the entire evening. Oh, I hate that pick.
Aaron Rodgers talking to the media today. One of the things he said was, you know, basically he put on his Bill Parcells hat about the groceries. If he's going to cook them, or at least have to get in the bowl with them, he'd like to help choose what they are. Kumaro apparently was a friend of his, the wide receiver that they let go of last year. And that, we are finding out, seems to be at the heart of, you know, his frustration. Let's put it this way. I believe that him filming commercials with Patrick Mahomes is what has fueled his frustration with the Packers. Because they get together and he's like, yeah, I lost my guy, Coomer. Like, oh, they never get rid of Dieter Brock, whoever.
Garrick Dieter.
Yeah. Garrick Dieter. That's my guy. They keep him around. Even when they release him, they bring him right back to the practice squad. What? Yeah. Yeah, man. Well, I mean, with their first-round pick, they're always taking these DBs and everything. Oh, man, they asked me who I liked. I said Clyde Edwards-Helaire. They went out and got me Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Awesome.
What? What are you talking about? Are you what?
That's funny. That's,
yeah, man. David said, "It's awesome. I could host the Wheel of Fortune if I wanted to. It's always been my dream."
That is awesome.
What? I love Jeopardy. They're gonna let you host it. Yeah, if I want to. Like literally everything Aaron Rodgers wants, Patrick Mahomes has received. I'm not kidding. I do think it contributed to it because I think the Chiefs have bent over backwards. And Andy Reid bends over backwards as a coach to make everybody feel like they're part of the equation. In particular, he knows how important Patrick Mahomes is. He knows how much better his life is. And he understands how to make a quarterback happy. And he's doing it. And I don't think Aaron Rodgers has a bad spot in Green Bay. I just think it's not as good as Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. And I do believe that getting to know Patrick Mahomes has made him decide his life isn't near as good as it really is.
That's not like when you first put that up there, people are like, what? You talk it through. Could be.
I think the other thing is, what's the likelihood that Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams are going to land on the same team next year? Who on God's earth is going to have that kind of cap room?
Well, not the Chiefs.
I see a team trying to lowball Davante Adams, saying he gets to come play with Aaron Rodgers or vice versa, and they both end up getting individually better deals than whatever team tries to put them together.
And the only team
deals in other places.
Yeah. The only team I can kind of think of that would actually have that kind of cap room are the Jags, and they just drafted Trevor Lawrence.
Maybe the Texans.
Yeah.
By the way, they're shedding payroll everywhere, and we'll be shedding Deshaun Watson, presumably.
Adams today was asked if Aaron Rodgers returning might mean he'll accept being less than the highest paid wide receiver. Adams said, that's not going to happen.
I think that's great. I hope the Packers do sign him. I really hope that the Broncos or Raiders or Chargers make him the highest paid receiver, because I think when he gets away from Aaron Rodgers, there's going to be a similar Odell Beckham Jr. effect. Because Rodgers looks for him all the time. And Rodgers throws those, balls into coverage that are the DB's not looking, that are just on the money. And Adams snatches them out of the air over the helmet.
Look up and there it is.
Yeah, over the DB who's not looking. It doesn't work like that. I mean, just look at the fall off of Odell Beckham Jr. Eli Manning went to him every single time, seemingly, with the Giants. And he piled up these numbers, and everyone decided he was the best wide receiver in football. I don't think he was ever the best wide receiver in football. I think his target volume was so massive, he couldn't help but put up big numbers. I think there's a lot of that with Davante Adams as well. Two 1,000-yard seasons. Two!
Mm-hmm. A lot of guys have made a lot of money off of Aaron Rodgers' arm.
Yeah, I think so as
Randall
well.
Randall Cobb. I mean, virtually everyone they've put out there, he's been able to turn. Marquez Valdez Scantling or whatever. It doesn't matter. You put any name out there, seemingly he can turn him into a.
Yeah. For Sam McDowell, by the way, Marquez Valdez Scantling on my dynasty team. Went up to practice today, Sam McDowell. We referenced Chad Williams, who is, cast off from the Cardinals. Or at least he was originally with the Cardinals. He may have had a stop in between Arizona and here. But he made some, what did he do? Did he make a catch or did he drop something? No, he got open and they overthrew him or something. I said, don't worry, he wasn't going to catch it anyway. I've had him on my dynasty team for 3 or 4 years with the Cardinals. He doesn't make those catches. And he turned around and goes, who don't you have on your team? How deep is this league? I said, we got them all. Pretty much everybody who's a skill position player. There's over 400 skill position players on 14 teams. We're familiar. Just ask Jake. Know who the chum is, because every one of our rosters has 20 of them.
By the way, Tate is listening, and he says on Twitter, for the record, all caps, then says, I was not the only one who was unsure of what the Suns were doing trading Jared Smith for Mikhail Bridges. In parentheses, they knew what they were doing, clearly.
Clearly, they did. Tate, tweet at me again. Did you, you were anti the Ayton pick, though, weren't you? I think he was Luka Doncic was where he wanted to go with that one. On draft night, I know you've debated it with your other Suns friends for ever since, but I recall you being anti
Ayton that night, but I can't remember for sure. I digress. 9133. He's hating Ayton. 913-810-810, the phone number. We'll talk some more Chiefs. I want to get into the Royals snatching defeat from the jaws of victory, ending their six-game win streak. That happened last night, although Brad Keller did pitch well.
The ultimate, for me, it was the ultimate. Brad Keller pitched well, and they lost.
That's what you want.
Perfect.
That's what you want. We'll take a break. You're in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
I could listen to him for hours.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You got to like this story. The number one quarterback recruit in the country is talking about leaving high school early and then committing to Ohio State because he can get paid. Right away, it's like, I guess academically he could get it done, you know, kind of the reclassification that goes on all the time in basketball. Wants to get to Ohio State, where he believes he can earn seven figures in name, image, and likeness, NIL, revenues. So got to get out of high school early and got to leave Texas.
Wow. Kid's got a great mullet working.
Quinn.
Does he really?
Ewers. Yes, it is strong.
I've just read the – oh, there it is. Oh, it's dyed blonde,
too. Combination.
He's like,
I don't have to wear a mullet. I'm going to dye it on top.
He's like, Trevor Lawrence, hold my beer. You may look like a Hanson brother, but I look like the lead singer to Def Leppard or the lead guitarist to Def Leppard.
How that guy isn't from northern Florida, I have no idea.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Show. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, Jared Eichhoff, the second Mets pitcher to allow 10 earned runs and walk five batters in a game. Who's the other? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.